This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
We're talking about drug decriminalization and the experiment that they've been involved with there in Oregon, and what has gone right, if anything, and what has gone wrong, at least according to The Atlantic, which did a very detailed piece recently looking back at the last 3 years, roughly, of, I guess not quite, maybe 2.5 years, of drug decriminalization in Oregon, as passed by a good amount of the voters in 2020. It's Ian and Jay in the studio here tonight. By the way, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash. Dash is digital cash. It is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending, which makes it pretty unusual in the world of cryptocurrencies. There's a lot of cryptos out there that are designed for, like, all these cool tech purposes and programming and, you know, all these wizardry, tech wizardry things. Like, they're really complicated, and you got to really do your research to learn the world of crypto. But when Bitcoin was created by Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever that person or persons is or are, when Bitcoin came out, it was in the white paper subtitled Peer-to-Peer Electronic Cash. Satoshi's vision was very clear. The idea of being able to send value from one person to another anywhere in the world without having any intermediaries or third parties being able to stand in the way of that happening. Unfortunately, with Bitcoin, it's kind of useless for that purpose. They essentially allowed Bitcoin to grow too large for its britches, so to speak, and the network is packed full of transactions, which has driven the cost of transactions up, and they've done nothing to fix it. So as a result, Bitcoin transactions, the last I checked, which was a couple weeks ago, were like a dollar a piece on average, or on median transactions.
Yeah, I did one the other day, and it was like $3.
Yeah, that's not useful. No. You know, if you're transferring $3,000 worth of Bitcoin, okay, no biggie. But if you're transferring $3 worth and it costs $3 on top to do that, that's just not useful. You can't buy a cup of coffee. It's not useful in the actual marketplace of buying and selling things. But Dash, however, is. Dash has managed to keep their fees down, in many cases well below 1 cent per transaction. And Dash is very, very effective at being useful for merchant purposes. In fact, because of its protection by what they call their chain locks technology, Dash is, as I understand it, it is impervious to the dreaded 51% attack, which is something that a lot of the competitors to Bitcoin are really worried about, because it doesn't take a whole lot of money for the attack, you know, the attackers out there. If they want to take down one of these other competing blockchains, there's just not a lot of strength behind them, so they can't really put up with those attacks. Dash can protect themselves, and so they got that ability. You can do more research to learn about the technicals behind chain locks. It's pretty interesting stuff. So Dash is really useful. It is essentially, you can consider it to be a done deal when you get that Dash transaction in, because they are irreversible transactions. Go and learn more at dash.org. That's where you can learn more about Dash. It's one of the oldest cryptocurrencies. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get. It's easy to use Dash. And you can start over at dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO, by the way, for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit dash.org and start learning about Dash at dash.org. We continue here talking about the failure of the war on drugs, but has the attempt to decriminalize drugs also failed in Oregon? We're going to get into some of the numbers and some of the stories coming up here from a very detailed piece by The Atlantic. But first, we go to Skeeter on the line with Ian and Jay. Go ahead, Skeeter, calling from California.
Hey, I really called in originally to discuss secession, but since you guys are talking about drugs again in the drug war, I guess it's more relevant to talk about that. and I don't think we'll have time to get to secession. But, okay, so let me start with the drug war again. So on some points that, was it Jay? Is that his name? Yeah, and some, I disagree with a lot of what he says. Well, just on certain topics.
Well, pick one of them.
Yeah, so I disagree with the causal relationship Jay is proposing. Right? I don't think welfare causes drug use, but it's more likely that drug use causes a dependence on welfare. Number two, that
I don't think that Jay said that welfare causes drug use. I mean, maybe
it certainly incentivizes it.
Yeah, I think that what you likely will see is people who are on welfare are more likely to use more drugs. I think that's definitely true. I mean, people who are also...
What I'm saying is all the people that the EMTs are giving Narcan to and the people who are overdosing and their bodies they're picking up, you know, off the sidewalks in Springfield, Massachusetts, for example, and in Manchester. And there was just recently one in Hillsborough. And one in Hillsborough was definitely, Hillsborough, New Hampshire, was definitely a woman that was on welfare. That overdosed and they Narcan'd her and they couldn't, you know, bring her back. But so my statement is the people that are overdosing, according to the EMTs that are showing up on the scene, who have to do an intake form, they got to write these people's name and, you know, they got to do paperwork, are on welfare. And one of the other guys said to me, he's like, basically, the resources of the emergency response system in Springfield, Massachusetts, is quite literally like 90% of it is overdose, is drug stuff. And that wasn't that 15 years ago. 15 years ago, it was maybe like 20%. And it's just exploded.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just you've made an implication. You even said it again, that it incentivizes drug use just now.
That's the observation I've made.
Well, I think that the point is on that, at least my understanding of it, is idle hands do the devil's work, as they say, right? So people that are not doing anything, people that have no reason to live, essentially, they have nothing that's driving them. They're just sitting around all day getting paid to do nothing. Those people, I would agree with Jay, are more likely to take up a drug habit if they never had one before. But I do think that typically what you're seeing with welfare is people who are likely already on drugs doing more drugs as a result of having more free time, considering they're not having to work.
Yeah, drug addicts who go from not being on welfare to being on welfare really do a lot more drugs. And it's pretty much, it gets to the point to where that's all they have, that's all they end up doing is drugs because they don't have to do anything else.
How many drug addicts do you know in your life?
The people that died maybe of like a fentanyl overdose when they're trying to take cocaine. Yeah, I know a few.
Okay.
Were
they productive people or were they welfare people?
Yeah, they're only doing it recreationally, you know, at a club. You know, they're taking cocaine and they, you know, they don't know, like, since government makes it tough to smuggle it in, they have, the smugglers have to make it the strength stronger, so they put in fentanyl, they mix in fentanyl.
So would you agree, at the very least with us, Skeeter, that the war on drugs needs to end?
No.
No?
So I'm getting to that.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So let me get there. So it's another point of contention. I don't really have a point of contention if that's what you're saying about the causal relationship with even welfare, that it induces more drug use.
Explain to me why it is. I don't want you to just, like, get there. I want to explain to me why you think that the war on drugs, the idea of using the police and the violence that they bring to people's lives is something that should continue.
Okay, I'll just jump to that part. Okay, so, again, I'm an accelerationist. Well, I'm not a principle. It's not a principle. So I use it as a tool to get to where I want, right, which is the end of the state. But I don't want to kill off everybody to do so, right? I wouldn't press a nuke button to nuke the entire world. That accelerates government, but it defeats my purpose of serving evolution's purpose, right? So
Well, that's what you think evolution is. It's Skeeter's directed evolution, where you think evolution should put the human race is what you're willing to put, you know, the violence of the state behind. So you're totally fine with sacrificing untold millions of Americans and other people around the world into government prisons, into, you know, lifelong drug addiction because you want to continue the war on drugs because you think it will actually increase the size of the state to the point where the state will fall and then go away?
This is, yeah, and then the benefits come after that, too, with the lives I save, right? Again, you keep doing an incomplete cost-benefit analysis. I can demonstrate.
I mean, you're just a psychopath. I mean, you're just absolutely crazy, somebody who doesn't mind victimizing other people who will actually sit there and act as though you're helping by throwing people in a prison cell because you think that's going to somehow accelerate the demise of the state.
Let's go through, I have no choice but to go through a hypothetical quantitative example.
I have a choice. So, good night. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Let's talk to somebody that might know a thing or two about the war on drugs. David Hathaway, the sheriff down in Santa Cruz County in Arizona, who's a former DEA agent turned good guy, turned libertarian, and he's here on the line with us. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, good evening, Ian and Jay. Great talking to you guys. I wasn't going to talk about drug stuff, but based on Skeeter's thing, I'd give a little anecdote. I was the office head of a DEA office in Illinois for 5 years and the office head of a DEA office in Missouri for 5 years. And we noticed that, and the drug dealers noticed, that when the welfare checks came in on the first day of the month, that's when the big shipments would come in because, you know, the drug dealers knowing the market yep. know that that's when the demand is because that's what the welfare money was spent on predominantly. But what I was calling about was something else. Nikki was talking last night about a ghost town. I can't remember if it was Connecticut or something, and it was kind of like mm-hmm. a clickbaity headline saying that it was, you know, illegal to go there because it was so scary and spirit-filled and all that.
Yeah, I think
and
it was called Dudleytown or Dudleyville, yeah. Connecticut. Yeah.
And then it turned out the truth of the matter was later in the article that there was a conservation easement preventing people from going there. Just to give a little anecdote about that, I own a ghost town in Arizona, and it's the only piece of private land in a mountainous area that's everything else is Forest Service land, government-owned land around it. This piece of land is 62 acres. It's called Sunnyside, Arizona. So if you Google Sunnyside Ghost Town, you'll see a lot of pictures and articles about it. But back to this conservation easement thing, I've been approached multiple times by people who have said, look, you need to lock your land into a conservation easement, which means you make a deal with the government where your property taxes stay low, but you have to agree to never do any commercial ventures on the land, whether it be livestock or farming or a farmer's market or they have something like, you know, a Freedom Fest there or something like that, where you have to agree to never use it for productive commercial purposes. Mm-hmm. And of course, I've refused to do that over and over. But when Nikki was reading that article yesterday, I think it was last night, online,
yeah.
it reminded me of the circumstance that I'm in with this ghost town that I own where I've turned them down, but multiple times I've been told, look, you need to do this to preserve the environment in that area where there's tens of thousands of acres of federal land, and yours is the only piece of private land surrounded by federal land, and to fit with the government's, vision for that area. They don't want anything commercial. And it was a mining town. My great-grandparents were miners. They had a gold mine and silver mine there, and they also had a lumber mill because that area of the mountains in Arizona actually has timber, so they would provide the shoring and stuff for the other mines.
I have to ask, David, why would you want to buy a ghost town? Like, what is the interest? Is it that you're hoping there's still some gold in them there hills? Or,
you know? No, it's I inherited it. My great-grandparents moved from Dodge City, Kansas in the 1800s to Arizona. Not that many people in Arizona are from Arizona. It's kind of a transient population. People come here to work for Raytheon in Tucson, which is the biggest employer in Tucson. They come to the universities. They come to the aerospace industry and government agencies like the big Border Patrol offices. So there's very few people that they go way back. Like, actually, Arizona became a state in 1912. So my family was here before this was a state where there was no line on the border, where people had ranch property on both sides of the border. So my ancestors came as gold miners, gold and silver miners, hard rock mining in those mountains. And that's actually what that is. If you see pictures of that on internet, it was a gold mining town. And then it fortunately stayed in the family. My grandfather inherited it from great grandparents, and then my dad, and then me. So, along with the ranch land, that's just a piece of land I happen to own. Like, the buildings have mostly fallen down. There was a schoolhouse there and a post office when I was a kid, and multiple other houses. But nowadays there's only a few of the buildings left. But you know,
is it something you want to sell later on, or like, why are you holding on to it?
No, it's just kind of too sentimental. Like, we have family reunions there. There's extended family that it means a lot to them, because they trace their roots back to there. And, you know, and I also intend to use it for commercial purposes. I don't have cattle there or livestock there now, but, it's sentimental, and I want to hang on to it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, Sheriff, it sounds like the people approaching you might be this, like, United Nations Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 crowd. One of my friends, Dave Kopasz, 20 years ago, he was going to every rotting gun club in Western Massachusetts and Connecticut and New Hampshire he could, presenting about how the Agenda 21 initiative to sort of, you know, essentially make the United States pretty much off limits except for a handful of mega cities. And, you know, the idea was to return, you know, all the wildlife, the wilderness land. No humans could go there. No farming, no agriculture. No, nobody could live there, is sort of the deal. And so what happens is any kind of tracts of land that they can sort of get their teeth into through, I like to refer to these things as jurisdictional traps, like what they're trying to say, you know, you got to put it in some kind of conservation easement or whatever. So is this like a Agenda 21 type? You know,
and it's kind of really insidious the way the process happens. Like, there's a lot of big ranches in Arizona, because Arizona is marginal land for, you know, pasture land. It's not as lush as what you have back there in New Hampshire. So you have to have a big tract of land to make it profitable. So you're talking thousands of acres. Now, what happens if these are kind of family owned operations, and when it comes time for the next generation to inherit it, there is a 60%, you know, what you could call death tax. Typically, a single person can pass on $600,000 worth of value without an inheritance tax. A married couple, $1.2 million. So what's happened on some of these big mega historic ranches, these families aren't rich. They just happen to have a lot of land, you know, what you call land poor. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is the last person, you know, the last spouse that dies that owns that ranch, the children can't find a way to hang on to the ranch. And let me give you an example. There's these Spanish land grants here that were still honored when Arizona became a state. These big Spanish land grants, there was one called the San Rafael de la Zanja land grant, and it was a big ranch that had come through different generations into a current era family. And then what happened, they couldn't afford to pay the inheritance tax. So along comes the Nature Conservancy, which is a quasi-governmental, because the government just can't come in and buy it, because it was originally homesteaded or attained legally. So there's these quasi-governmental agencies, these NGOs, that use the cover of being kind of private, but they're not really. Like, the Nature Conservancy came in and they made a deal where, look, you sell this whole thing to us, and then the government agreed to defer the inheritance tax. And the family completely lost the ranch, but kept a little portion that they could live on. And then it became Nature Conservancy, which means nobody can use it. It's the most lush pasture land in this part of the state, but it can't be used but because in
so
order
shut
to
it
dodge
down.
The tax
they,
implications,
wow.
Yeah, they had to put it in one of these conservation shelters that's just like you said, Jay, you know, it's like, yeah, Agenda 21.
So this is effectively gobbling up family-owned farmland and putting it in corporate hands that are supposedly doing nothing with it, at least for the moment, but at least cutting out these family farms means less competition for the Monsantos of the world. Is that right?
Yeah, because there's no way the next generation can inherit it. They can't mm-hmm. afford to inherit it. They
wow.
can't just shell over, you know, when the person dies, they can't hand over 60% of the value.
And just to be clear, government. Is this an Arizona tax thing, this death tax you're talking
no,
about?
No, US.
Oh, it's federal.
That's federal.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
So this particular inheritance tax only applies to federal U.S. citizens. Only federal U.S. citizens, 14th Amendment citizens, are subject to the income tax. The IRS is very clear about this. Mm. The United States is defined as District of Columbia, territories, and possessions. So by correcting your status, which, you know, you can go on the internet and internet search, you know, correcting my status as a U.S. versus state citizen. There's a whole bunch of guys offering this service all over the place. And, you know, which is something I did a long time ago, and a lot of my friends have. But basically, the a federal United States citizen is a second-class citizen, to where a state citizen is a first-class citizen, and a state citizen is not subject to the IRS stuff. So
yeah.
So I sold some land, for example, that I had years ago, and, you know, it was land I paid, like $1,200 for, you know, I was 18 years old, and I sold it basically for like $20,000. You know, I never lived there or anything. Actually, $28,000, I guess, is what I sold it for. And, you know, so there was like, you know, I just checked it, did the documentation, for example, that I'm not a, you know, federal United States citizen. And there was no, like, you know, capital gains or any of that stuff mm-hmm. on it. And so, you know, this is another thing where people just, you know, need to correct their citizenship. Because if you are a U.S. citizen and you check off a box on some government application that you're a United States citizen, the government says, oh, you're a 14th Amendment United States citizen that has not rights, but privileges and immunities. And
yeah, I give you another example. It's not related to land, but since I live right here on the border, cars that are registered in Mexico, so they're not U.S. citizens, but they have a visa. They can have all these interesting cars that were made in Russia and Czechoslovakia. They've never met the crash test, DOD regulations, but they're very efficient vehicles, like these 1,000cc minivans that are made by major manufacturers like Toyota and Nissan, but they can't be – they don't fit all the DOT guidelines. But if they have a Mexico plate, they can drive across and they can circulate in the U.S. It's kind of an example of that, Jane, Jay, like a non-U.S. citizen meeting the laws of a foreign country, but they have a visa to cross, and so then their car crosses with them, and, you know, there's these reciprocal agreements on the license plates. If you have time, Ian, I also have a story about a mountain lion. But
I actually am curious if you want to weigh in on Oregon's drug decrim. Have you been following what's been going on up there at all?
No, I haven't.
All right. I would love to hear from you on another night then, maybe as we get closer through this story, to get your opinions as somebody who was formerly a drug warrior and see if you can identify how they've screwed it up. Because that's what they're claiming here, is that this drug decrim experiment in Oregon is not going well. Thanks for the call tonight, David. I appreciate the call. There's more coming up.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
U.S. USA News Update. Russian President Vladimir Putin will not travel to South Africa for a BRICS Nations summit next month.
That's because the country would be required to arrest Putin for war crimes that Russia has allegedly committed during its invasion of Ukraine. South Africa belongs to the International Criminal Court, which issued an arrest warrant for Putin in March. According to the president of South Africa, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will take his place at the summit. The Kremlin says that Putin will attend virtually. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A gunman has killed two people at the start of the Women's Soccer World Cup in New Zealand. FIFA said the shooting was an isolated incident and not related to the World Cup. The Biden administration suspending funding for the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China. That's according to a memo from the Department of Health and Human Services. Corey Myers, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Have you heard the warning from the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. Says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Join us. And the number here is 603-283-6160. We're talking about the war on drugs, the failed war on drugs that has destroyed so many lives, in addition to the people who are already destroying their own lives with drug addiction, for instance. And, of course, destroying people who weren't drug addicts' lives by catching people just randomly, you know, pullovers, police pullovers, catching people that happen to have drugs. They weren't drug addicts. They were just drug users.
Never mind the amount of people who the cops plant drugs on them. I mean,
that happens, too.
That happens,
using
too.
Using drugs to destroy people's lives who might not even have been using them. So, I mean, there's so many stories. We've covered many of them over the years. And one story that we touched on in 2020 was the amazing, I guess you call it a resolution or whatever, voter, what do they call it? I'm spacing on the term where voters put something on the ballot, basically, and it's something that happens more in other states. We don't get that here in New Hampshire.
Ballot initiative.
Yeah, initiative. Thank you for that. The ballot initiative that was Measure 110 passed with a 17% margin. So people wanted this. And now they're saying that is to say decrim, which is decrim of all drugs, small amounts. So you still can't legally sell the drugs. You can't legally possess large amounts of the drugs, but you can kind of legally decriminalized possess small amounts of them. And this was going to be a big experiment. It is a big experiment. The question is, how's it going? And according to The Atlantic, in a very detailed piece, they say, not so hot. And that's what I wanted to get deeper into here. What we found out was that now 60% in a state poll have blamed Measure 110 for making drug addiction, homelessness, and crime worse, they say. This year's legislative session, which ended in late June, saw at least a dozen Measure 110-related proposals from both Democrats and Republicans, ranging from the technical fixes to full restoration of criminal penalties for drug possession, two significant changes, tighter restrictions on fentanyl, and more state oversight of how Measure 110 funding is distributed, passed with bipartisan support.
I think we're going to see some hard pendulum swing to the right that's going to get real authoritarian, and what's going to cause that pendulum swing to the right is this example, for example, look what happens when we legalize drugs. We get all these drug encampments. We get all these overdoses.
Yeah, but
and
the thing is,
stuff.
The drug encampments are happening outside of Oregon, right?
Well, like, yeah, they're happening everywhere. And the thing is,
so that didn't lead to drug encampments.
And the thing is, though, but they're not really enforcing in all the blue cities. They're just not really enforcing any of these. Even if it is against the law to have these drugs, they're not enforcing it. It's just like they're not enforcing regular even crimes. You're not enforcing shoplifting crimes. Mm-hmm. If you steal less than $900, we're not going to prosecute you.
Well,
kind
plus
of stuff.
It's either legal or they're not enforcing the encampments, right?
Right.
I mean,
right,
people
yeah.
can just set up tents out on Main Street or whatever.
Yeah, and so this is going to be pushed as the example of why we need to have hard right enforcement on, pendulum swing to the right, I believe, is what's coming around next.
And that's
very
not
going to
solve any of these problems. Well, it'll push it out of public view.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's it.
Well, not even out of public view. It'll be like the military on the streets, mm-hmm. rounding up people and doing whatever with them.
Well, the homeless people are going to be somewhere, right? Like, if they start rounding up homeless people and put them into the jail, they're going to fill the jail real quick. So eventually they're going to have to let them out.
And the prison and industrial complex really loves that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would give them excuses to build more prisons, but eventually you might actually get the conservatives mad because they don't want to pay $70,000 a year or whatever it costs in your state. It might be as low as 40, but there's different ranges to keep somebody in a prison cell, to give them three hot meals a day and a cot to sleep on. You're basically, you've given the homeless a home and now you're having to pay for it in that particular case.
Unless that particular conservative is, getting a kickback from that corporation.
If they work for the prison industrial complex,
Or just the company that provides the food to the prison.
But that's the irony of this, right? Like, on one hand, the conservatives can see the problem of the liberals handing out all these benefits and creating these homeless camps or whatever and incentivizing this. On the other hand, if you put the authoritarianism into place, like you're predicting, then that's just doing the same thing, but putting a different shine on it, essentially. The conservatives are saying, quote, we're doing something, but you're just housing the homeless and you're feeding the homeless just like the liberals were. You're just doing it in your conservative camps.
Well, the thing is, if you push this thing so hard that where it just all these cities where the welfare epidemic is fueling the drug epidemic, like Kensington, Philadelphia, Venice Beach, California, just pick one. And then the people in control don't care if it's left authoritarian mm-hmm. control or right authoritarian control. As long as there's a reason to have an authoritarian control, and as long as they can keep on swinging this pendulum left and right to where now it's going to be the right's turn for a while, yep. because all the people are sick of all the drug addicts and the drug encampments, and you can't walk down in the streets. And, well, even like here in Manchester, New Hampshire, we got some like pretty rough areas. But one thing I could tell you about Manchester is like in a couple city block area where a whole bunch of Free Staters bought houses. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before.
Yeah.
They're pretty much cleaned up. You don't see the drug addicts around there or the streetwalkers because there's a bunch of Free Staters walking around, open carrying. They don't want that stuff around.
It definitely helps to bring better people in, that's for sure. But it doesn't solve – none of these things solve the problem, right? The welfare, quote-unquote, solution makes things worse. We've already pointed that out. Throwing people in a prison cell doesn't work either. You pointed out earlier that the guards will just smuggle things in, or the prisoners themselves will smuggle it in where the sun don't shine or whatever. And you can't keep the drugs out of the prisons either. Then you just have everybody paying the ridiculously inflated prices to keep people in prison. And the reason why none of these things are going to solve the problem, because a lot of the drug addicts, as soon as they get out, they're just going right back to the crack house. So you cannot clean up this problem with the violence of the state, whether it be through welfare or through prisons. You can't clean it up with trying to go with solving the issue without hitting it at its source. And the source of this issue, welfare exacerbates it. But I think the source of this issue, generally, when you talk to people who are drug addicts, is these are people who fundamentally are not happy with their lives for whatever reason. You know, maybe they were abused by their parents. Maybe they, you know, hate their job. Maybe they don't like their husband or their wife. Whatever. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, the fact that they have to work 100 hours a week to pay all the taxes to maintain a life, or they could just get high and, you know, live in a tent on a sidewalk.
Sure. And so because people are unhappy, they seek out something to escape, whether it's alcoholism or whether it's hard drugs or whatever that is, video games. I mean, there's something to fill that void in their lives. And so until people are satisfied, until people can actually have pride in their work and in their family life or whatever, we're still going to have these problems. They're just going to shift in their forms because the leftists and the rightists are only proposing to clean up the edges of the problem, the symptoms. They're trying to
empower themselves. They don't really care about the problem.
No, and I think that's a great point. They position themselves as though they care about this, but the reality is they just want power. I think that's absolutely true.
There's this commentator, podcaster, influencer. Her name is Lauren Southern. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. So she did
kind of a righty.
Yeah, she's Canadian. Yeah. She's sure kind of righty. Yeah. Yep. But she did a really good expose on the city of Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia, maybe. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Vancouver, on the homelessness issue and the amount of money that this city spends. I can't remember the numbers, but mm-hmm. it was like insane. But it's just like the hospitals. So the reason healthcare is so expensive is because all of the special government-related, government-authorized contractors are able to sell, you know, the food, the sheets, the bedding, the little placards, the Band-Aids, the hospital beds, all the hospital
prices.
Stuff, like at like, you know, 100x market value.
Right.
So they make tremendous amount of money. This is why simple hospital procedures cost, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in America, and you go, you know, down to Mexico, and the same procedure is $1,500,
mm-hmm.
and it's way better, and you're treated way better. So it's the same. So Lauren Southern, with respect to Vancouver, was explaining how all of this money to like deal with the homelessness issue is basically just going to a whole bunch of government contractors, and these like there's not enough housing for the homeless, and you know all the housing that the major amounts of, you know, local, state, or local, provincial, and, you know, federal taxes are paying for is, you know, these people are living in squalor in these buildings that are just, you know, like the water doesn't work and things leak and this, that, and the other thing, or the heat don't work or whatever. And it was a crazy number. It was, you know, $100,000 or something per, like, housing unit per year to like
to live in
this, and it's just
crazy.
Because it's all private contractors, and it's a, you know, it's the pork.
Yeah,
it's
somebody's cashing checks, and they don't care about what they're actually doing.
And this has happened in every city in America. Same
mm-hmm.
thing.
Sure,
you have these contractors that are just getting, you know, paid hand over fist to Howie Carr, who's like a local guy here. I listened to him on
he's a right wing talk show host.
Yep. He is originally from Boston, and he was talking about how there was a hotel in Taunton, Mass, where a whole bunch of homeless people got put during the COVID stuff in 2020, and the hotel is like not recovered. It's a cesspool, and it's like $7,000 per individual
mm-hmm.
is a number he said that they got from like the Massachusetts whatever Department of Revenue something or another Freedom of Information Act request stuff. It was like $7,000 per month per individual to put them in that hotel. So the people on the hotel are just getting paid bank, and
they're just running in into the ground.
And yeah, they're not doing nothing to it. You can't rent. You know, nobody's going to go rent a room at this hotel and
get robbed.
And it's all occupied. And it's the same thing in Worcester, Mass. There was another one. A guy they were talking about where it's just a whole bunch of like, you know, migrants, or they refer to them as illegals. I don't like that term, but people just like being put in there and housed by the state.
doesn't lead to good things. Bad incentives. Let's go to the phones here. We've got, I don't know who this is. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening. I didn't call to talk about myself, but I will just to enrich the discussion previously for a moment here.
Sure.
I just want to mention, not all drug use is escapism. I myself, as I may have called a couple of months ago and mentioned.
Oh, I was talking about drug abuse, sir. Just to clarify, we were talking earlier about the difference between drug use and drug abuse. There are people who use drugs for recreational purposes. They're completely well-adjusted people who go to work. They're productive. They take care of their families. A drug abuser, on the other hand, tends to be a person who is trying to escape something. Right, in their
mind.
Well,
there's a third category, too.
Okay.
Self-medication. It's not recreation, but it's necessary, and it's certainly not abuse.
Yeah, sure.
I was put on drugs that I shouldn't have been on as a child, so in my opinion, if it's a drug war, I'm fighting back, and I do it just to balance it out. But the drug war failed for the same reason in general that drug decrim failed in Oregon. It's because of how it's done. Like you were saying earlier, you noted that 100 years ago, you could get cocaine and heroin in the drugstore next to anything else that was legal or not. I guess it was all legal. But people weren't descending into the same patterns. I find that the battle between freedom and liberty in the state is all about faith versus fear. To me, it looks a lot like the world is just doing better when people have faith in each other and worse when they don't. And this is what makes religion so successful, you know, no matter what you believe in. That belief will open new opportunities and new paths that make you a great example to other people, and it takes on, right, either one way or the other. But we're living in a very fear-based society right
now. That's true.
That's why everything's inflating. That's why people are losing their jobs, their livelihoods, and it's all going down.
The government is really interested. I mean, the government thugs want you to be afraid. They want people to live in a state of fear so they can be the ones that can have the solution. Just turn to them. Elect the new great man. And the great man will come along and solve all your problems. I mean, that's the same thing we hear every 4 years from these federal politicians that just, oh, well, the rest of them were all bad, but just elect me and everything will be fine. And it's,
yeah, and they always have a system they want to propose with certain planks that they're going to campaign on, and you're supposed to judge them as to whether or not they put those things in place and kept to the promises. But, I mean, they're talking about a system that they're going to use, and it's all their vision of how things work based on their personal life experience and how many people agree with them. Determines not whether or not they're right, just determines whether or not we're going to go down that path, and it never works, because any system is a destination, just like anarchy. It's a destination, not a vehicle. Anarchy is not a vehicle, it's a destination. And by that I mean, if we have faith in each other and realize that every moment is a new moment, has nothing to do with the moment before or after, just treat each day like a new day and do what you can to make the right things happen, not judge people, not be afraid of the consequences of their freedom, but have faith, and things generally will trend towards anarchy. One day people will behave responsibly enough to make taxation obsolete, and you won't be talking about drug decrims or drug wars at all.
Well, I look forward to that day. I hope we see it in our lifetime. And good advice tonight, man. I appreciate it. What was your name, caller?
Please. Adam,
thanks for the call.
Kelly.
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Let's continue here. Riley is on the line here, the gentleman who does the editing of the Free Talk Live Digest online. Riley, you're a fresh mover here to New Hampshire. Congratulations on making the move.
Thank you, sir. I'm very happy to be in New Hampshire. It's nice to be in the free state, plus a little closer to my girlfriend in Pennsylvania.
Nice. Yeah, that's always nice. Moved from Utah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. The topic I want to talk about, speaking about drugs and drug decrim, I am planning a 420 rally tomorrow at Central Square in Keene, New Hampshire. If you're in the New England area or if you really want to come here, I would recommend coming because I'm hoping that I'm not the only one there. So if you're around, come by.
Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you're reviving something that hasn't happened in on a regular basis here in New Hampshire for some time, which is the, I guess, technically still civil disobedient act of consuming cannabis in public. Now, this used to be a misdemeanor charge if they caught you with any amount of cannabis in public, but in 2017, there was New Hampshire's first ever cannabis decriminalization that passed, and so that resulted in it becoming no longer a misdemeanor, but a $100 fine for the first offense. I believe you can go through three offenses, and then it goes up to a misdemeanor at that point. But as a $100 fine, it has basically resulted in almost no one, at least in the Keene area, receiving tickets for cannabis. The cops just don't enforce it.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you ever heard of anyone getting a ticket since then? Neither have I.
I'm not. So is that what you're... are you hoping to get a ticket for this, Riley? Or are you just wanting to exercise your right to put whatever you want in your own body?
Well, I do not want to get a ticket for this. And okay. I do not think the government should give me a ticket for this. I believe that cannabis is a sacrament, and I want to exercise my religious right to practice my spiritual belief in public.
Now this
like
is
every other Christian.
Yeah, now this is an interesting angle on this, and I happen to know that you're serious about this particular religious belief. And it references a case that I think was 2020, actually, in the Supreme Court here in New Hampshire. There was a guy who was arrested for, I believe, mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms. And he was found guilty at the Superior Court level. He appealed that to the New Hampshire Supreme Court. And the New Hampshire Supreme Court unanimously ruled in this man's favor, overturning his conviction, because his argument was he was using his mushrooms for spiritual purposes. And the New Hampshire Constitution is very clear that you have the ability to not just believe what you want as far as a religion is concerned, but you have the freedom in New Hampshire to express or to worship in the way that you want. So the New Hampshire Constitution is actually better on religious freedom than the United States Constitution because it protects your right to worship how you want. And so that means that if using psychedelic mushrooms, or in this particular case, using cannabis, is part of how you worship God, then that is going to likely be a success if you have to go through the court procedure. Because obviously telling that to a cop isn't going to stop them from arresting you necessarily.
Right.
Or in the case
They're
of cannabis.
Arresting.
Right. Or in the cannabis case, ticketing you. You likely will not be arrested. The only reason you'll get arrested for a violation, quote unquote, in Keene is if you refuse to identify yourself, then they do arrest you until they can figure out who you are, and then they cut you loose because their argument is they have to have a name to write on the ticket, essentially. So if you
right.
identify yourself during the ticketing process, then you usually just walk away with a court date in that case. But as we've learned, I don't know anybody who's been ticketed for cannabis. I actually asked the Keene police a couple years ago to give me their statistics for the 2 years prior to decriminalization and the 2 years after decriminalization as far as cannabis arrests and cannabis ticketing was concerned. And it went from like 76 a year, if I recall correctly, to two. So basically, they're just not enforcing this at all. I suspect the two were probably people that they just happened to arrest for something else and had marijuana on them or something like that.
It sounds like with the Supreme Court, you know, unanimously ruling that, you know, it was the mushrooms were, you know, the religious sacrament, has definitely put a chilling effect, you know, on, you know, law enforcement to it, because, you know, this is what every Rastafarian's been saying for as long as I can remember, you know, about cannabis, that is the religious sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's great that the Supreme Court upheld that. I wasn't aware of that.
It's a huge case, and it really sets New Hampshire apart, I think, from a lot of the other places in the country where this is not at all a settled piece of law. Now, to be fair, I've pointed this out at the hearings that they've had over the last 2 years for decriminalization of mushrooms. There's been bills that have been put forward. Also, there's been a DMT decrim bill or a legalization bill here in recent, the last year. And I explained this to the state representatives on the criminal justice panel. I explained the court case, gave them the name of the case, like, here you go. This is legal for spiritual purposes. All we're saying now is leave the rest of the people alone who are doing it for recreational purposes. They don't deserve to go to a prison cell either. And, of course, they've
right.
yet to pass
Nobody,
these bills.
No one deserves to go be locked in a cage for possession of a plant or a fungus to alter their consciousness or to express their religious practices any way they choose. It's immoral for anyone to think that.
Well, I hope that you do have some people show up. You're going to Keene Central Square, you said, tomorrow at 4:20 in the afternoon in New Hampshire?
That's correct.
All right. Well, yep. I hope some people show up to support you on this, even though it is short notice. And even though, you know, unfortunately, the decriminalization bill of the cannabis decrim bill in 2017, it seemed to just take the wind out of the sails of the cannabis legalization movement. It was almost as though a lot of the people that were all big advocates for this just kind of basically said, that's good enough. And then they just went home and never came out again to do anything else about this. So I'm not trying to down, you know, your efforts or anything like that. Just don't expect 100 people on day one.
Right. Maybe one or two if I'm lucky.
Right. All right, cool. Well, let us know how it goes, Riley.
I will.
Thanks for the call tonight, and welcome to New Hampshire.
Speaking of mushrooms and cow dung, the one point I wanted to make is I didn't know about this until like a week ago, but the commercial cow feed that you buy at like Tractor Supply or Blue Seal or something actually has a something put in it to not allow mushrooms to grow in the cow manure, and a guy from Texas. That I've been talking with a little bit, a friend of mine. He moved here from Texas, and he's, you know, into cows, and he comes over my place, and he's like, oh, you got mushrooms growing in your cow manure over there. I'm like, yep. And I go, you know anything about mushrooms? He's like, well, I don't know what kind of mushrooms those are, but I do know that you're not feeding commercial cow feed.
Mm.
I'm like, nope, I'm just feeding them barley, and actually, I'm not even feeding any grain right now. I haven't fed any grain in months because I'm finishing my cows grass-fed, but they're just getting hay. And haylage, and he says, "Yep, I forget what the ingredient was called, but he says they put this ingredient. I gotta ask him again what it is, and it's to so there's no. He says there's no magic mushrooms that grow, but basically it's like a thing that doesn't allow any fungus, I guess, to grow in the cow manure. And this is why like a lot of the big commercial dairy farms, like their manure is like so like." Like, it doesn't like compost right. You know, it's like hard to use, like in your, because it basically has an antifungal. And what do you need for your garden to be really like good? You need to have a mycelium network. When you start taking cow manure from the dairy farm that's, you
useless.
Know, buying feed from Cargill, you know, because that's where all the grain comes from, that all the local dairies around here has an ingredient in it. And
do you think the feds were up to the ones responsible for this, like the DEA?
I got to actually ask this guy what the ingredients called again. But that sounds crazy. Like good show prep for next week, actually.
Yeah, that sounds crazy. So if you want to comment here, join us. The number is 603-283-6160. So we're talking about Oregon decrim and the Atlantic article here. So few people consider Measure 110 a success out of the gate, according to Tony Morse, who's the Policy and Advocacy Director for Oregon Recovers. The organization promotes policy solutions to the state's addiction crisis, initially opposed Measure 110, but now supports funding the policy, though it also wants more state money for inpatient treatment and detox services. As Morse put it, quote, if you take away the criminal justice system as a pathway that gets people into treatment, you need to think about what's going to replace it. And I think this mindset is part of the problem, and I want to look closer at that coming up here in hour number three on Free Talk Live.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment, and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some, while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a one-week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this one-week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.